we are joined by For Us, By Us, Drew Butera. How you doing, Drew?
I'm good. I'm doing well. I'm a little stir crazy from this quarantine stuff, but I'm doing all right.
Yeah, you just heard that me and Jimmy are in New York, so that's pretty much a nightmare. Where are you at?
I am in sunny Orlando, Florida. So I got the pool. And at least I can go outside. You guys are stuck indoors, but I can go outside, go for a little walk or something like that. Bike ride, get some fresh air.
Yesterday, I walked down to the lobby to get my package, and then I jogged up the 4 flight of stairs, and I was like, okay, good. I did something today.
Good for you.
And that was all of it.
That's nice.
I have a fun fact.
Were you winded?
No, it was good. I almost thought about, like, maybe I'll just jog all the way up to the 10th floor and that'll be, like, much better. And then I was like, no fucking way. I'm not doing that. A little fun fact for everyone right away. We have two sets of New Britain, Connecticut roommates. Jake and I were roommates in New Britain, and you two were roommates in New Britain. So I think we only missed each other by a year or so. But Trev was telling me about your guys' time there. And Trevapalooza? Ploofapalooza?
Yeah, I don't remember if it was Ploofapalooza or Trevapalooza.
It was Trevapalooza. I think I still have one of our flyers.
If you were around the greater New Britain area in 2008, you probably got a Trevapalooza flyer. Because we were handing them out.
I tell you what, I guarantee you they didn't have the beach.
No, yeah. I was trying to tell Jim about that a little bit. So Drew and I, we roomed with two other guys. We had four people in like a 4-bedroom house, I think it was. Or was it 5 people?
I think it was 5 because I think someone was upstairs.
Yeah, we rented a house, 5 of us in it, and we kind of like drew straws. And there was 2 rooms in the basement. And this was like a basement. It wasn't like a finished nice basement. So nobody wanted those rooms. Drew and I ended up like getting those rooms through this like random drawing, whatever. So we were kind of like pissed at first. But in the end, we totally won the whole thing because our place didn't have air conditioning. And I didn't know this because there's no basements in California, but if you're in the basement, you know, underground, it's much, much cooler. So the guys were dying with all like the nice rooms, and Drew and I had it like made in the shade down there. It was pretty good.
Was it like open cement pillars?
And we went to the dollar store and got like these things you can, like murals you can hang from the wall and like blow up flamingos and like a little kiddie pool and like a palm tree. We turned it into, called it the beach.
We called it the beach. It was so grimy. Like we needed to like lift it up like a facelift. So we went to the dollar store, like you said, and just bought some like inflatable alligators and stupid stuff.
We had some good times.
We did.
How old were you guys? So you guys go way back then.
Yeah, that was what, 2007?
I was 22.
Eight?
Yeah, I was 22. Drew's a little older than me.
Yeah, I'm old. I'm old as dirt.
Got that nice hair, though. Still going.
Yeah, I got good genes. I don't look like I'm 36, but unfortunately, I am.
You don't look like you're 36. That's ridiculous.
If I shave all like the facial hair, I could still get carded at like 18 and up movies, like rated R.
Hey, join the club, bro. I was gonna say. I don't think you guys saw me around. I think when you guys were in New Britain, I was probably 18, 19, and I looked like I was 12 then. So,
you would not have gotten into our party.
No. I was out the door. I was wearing generic polo with like the plaid shorts. It was a bad time for me. But enough about me, guys. Drew, what's good? I mean, where we've kind of been starting with these things, it half sucks we have to, but how are you doing with all this? I mean, are you still working out? Are you like, what are you binging Netflix? What are you up to?
Yeah, I'm slowly getting into more Netflix and Hulu shows. Tiger King right now has me hooked.
Oh yeah.
I've heard that's crazy, but yeah, I'm still able to work out. The gym and like the are connected in one, and they are closed officially, but they still kind of let me go in there and work out and do some stuff, and it makes it easier too. Like the weather here in Florida is pretty nice, so I can still go outside, go for a run, do some stuff in the backyard, a little home prison workout type thing. So we're still getting it in, but I'd say from like 12 o'clock on is just kind of like when I'm like pulling my hair out, trying to find something to do.
Crazy.
Yeah. If you follow Drew on Instagram, you could see kind of what he's doing through his day. I think right away you did some landscaping, if I remember that.
Yeah. I jumped the gun too quick. We got home and I was like, I hated the bushes that were like right beside my pool. I was like, let's do it. Instead of like slowly dragging out into like a 3-day process, I just went gung ho from like the morning. Did all in one day. I was like, great, that's done. It took up a day. What now?
What now?
Yeah, you got to go start doing everything very slow, you know, like just one task a day, kind of just make it all last. How long did you take?
I have a lot, but I just can't like I want to put like a little chipping and putting green in my backyard. But then I'm like, well,
yes,
if I do it myself, I'm probably going to completely mess up my backyard. And then I was like, well, what if we do like a build a cage? And then I was like, well, I probably won't build a net right and wind up, you know, line drive a ball into my neighbor's window. So like, I have a lot of ideas. I never fall through with them.
That's good content, man.
Yeah. I mean, I should film it and see what goes from there. Maybe make some good TV.
Yeah. You'd be like the next Tiger King.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Is he not in Florida?
Yeah.
He's in jail, isn't he?
I don't know.
He was in Oklahoma, Texas, right? Or no, Oklahoma. Yeah. Oklahoma.
Oh man.
One of them's in Florida. One of them's got to be in Florida.
Carol.
Yeah, Carol.
I think that you would be a great Tiger King for Halloween. I know that's going to be a big costume, but I could see you pulling it off and like being able to kind of rock that look.
Worth expense and the time and effort to go into it, though. I think that would be a big hit.
Yeah, what?
That is going to be a huge costume. You're right, Trev.
Yeah,
it is.
So how long did it take you to leave spring training, Drew? Because you were down in Arizona, lighting it up.
Yeah.
And then what was the whole process there with the team and how did guys leave right away? Did you hang around and then were like, all right, shit, I got to go?
Yeah, we hung around a bit. We found out, I think it was like a Thursday, like Wednesday or Thursday, our game was canceled because of rain. And we had like this little window to do some stuff on the field. So we were taking BP. And it's actually in my group when we found out that spring training was being banged and that we were going to, you know, postpone the season. And so we kind of all just like took it in from there. It was like kind of, you know, weird. It was like, okay, game's over. Let's, you know, grab our bat and go home. And then we had a few meetings over the next couple of days. So we hung out for probably, I would say like 4 days. And the general consensus was like the complex, but it'll be like super limited. Food, you know, there'd be like no clubhouse or anything like that. It'd just be like come in, you could do work at a limited time. Like pitchers would be at one time, position players would be at another. And so through talking with a bunch of guys, a lot of guys like, I'm going home, you know, I can, you know, stay ready there. There's a lot more things that I could, like we didn't be able to use the weight room. So, you know, instead of paying, you know, like $1,000 a week to rent a place, I was like, I can go home, you know, have everything at the comfort of like, you know, my own house, my own gym, you know, hit at the facility that I'm going at. So like, I feel like I can get more done here than I would if I stayed in Arizona.
Now, as much as I'd like to ask more questions about Trevapalooza in that basement in New Britain, we do keep it baseball here a little bit, like 20% of the time. And, my favorite thing I've been asking dudes is that, like at Rockies camp this year, and maybe it's a pitcher because you're probably catching some of the newer guys, or who stood out at camp, dude? If you were coming on a baseball podcast at Rockies camp this year, that you'd be like, man, I got to mention this dude because he's special or he's different or he stood out for some reason.
You know, we had a few guys, kind of come into that position where it's like they don't, you know, not a lot of people know about him or they're coming up through the minor leagues. To me, one of like those guys would be Jonathan Daza. He's an outfielder and the guy is a hit machine, man. Like I think last year he hit like 380 in AAA and then kind of through some, you know, mental at bats kind of playing here and there, he started to like get his feel in September in up in the big leagues in Colorado and over into spring. I think the guy was hitting, you know, well over 300, but everything he hits is hard, you know, even his outs. He'll put together a good at bat. He may not hit for a lot of power, but, you know, he's going to get on base because he doesn't mind, you know, hitting 0-1 or 0-2, makes contact, runs well. And to me, he plays a really good center field. So he's a guy that I'd be like, you know, watch out for. He's going to be a stud.
I love like center that. Fielders. I love middle of the diamond guys. I love catchers. I love shortstops, and I love center fielders.
I think one of the things that I like about him the most is he like has a passion for the game. Like, he's not a guy that comes in, you know, 10 minutes before stretch and then leaves right after the game over. He's one of the first ones there. He loves hanging out. He loves asking questions. He loves just being around baseball. And, you know, I'll go through a whole day's workout. You know, and I've always been one of those guys that, like, you know, comes early, stays late, and I'm showering and he's still in his uniform because he's, you know, dry swinging by his locker just because he loves it. So that's one of the, he's got a real passion for the game, and I like that.
The dry swings by the locker. That'll get me every time. Oh, the Matt Tolbert special. No, it's good to hear. I love when you hear young guys doing that. It automatically sets them apart in my mind because that is what it takes to stay at the level, to be able to make the adjustments. You have to put the work in, especially when you're young. And a lot of guys will come up, go through the minor leagues and not necessarily develop a routine like that. Then they get to the big leagues and have to try to find one. But if this guy's already doing that, you know, I think that's a great call for a breakout kind of guy.
For sure.
I gotta ask this. So you are making SportsCenter. There's no highlights, no nothing. But Drew Butera still finds a way to get on SportsCenter.
Yeah.
So you posted a video. You're doing your backyard workouts, like you said. And I saw you doing this with your dad during the offseason, I believe. You got a jugs machine, and you're just shooting balls, and you're working on your receiving. And because of the quarantine, instead of having your dad do it, who next big? Sal will do it. You got the wife out there, and you got her working. You got her. You put her to work. Quarantine is not chill time for her. It's get to work. Let's get me back on this defensive prowess thing.
Yeah, I said, let's go. She was laying by the pool. I said, babe, enough. Like, no more. Like, you got enough sun. You got enough vitamin D. It's time to work, right? Let's go.
Let's get to work.
Yeah. You know what? I guess, like, I actually posted it a few times in the offseason. And it was a funny story funny for me because I think if you know my dad, he's the type of guy that, like, lives, eats, sleeps baseball. And, like, you literally could be talking about, you know, popcorn and somehow he'll, like, find a way to, like, correlate it to baseball. But he called me up one day and was like, hey, when's the machine coming? And I was like, oh, literally just got here. And I'm like, all right, cool. Yeah, come on over, I guess.
For sure, Sal.
Yeah. And so we did it a few times, and, like, I just had it on my Nest camera for the and, you know, the people that knew my dad were like, oh, my God, this is hilarious. And then I had Hillary do it, my wife, and the Rockies hit me up. I was like, hey, this is great content. Can we have the video? I was like, yeah, sure. I didn't even think anything of it. They put it out there, and then ESPN got it, and I didn't even see it. All of her friends, like, that, you know, their husbands or that they were watching ESPN, they, I guess, saw it on TV. They rewind it, sent her the video of it, and then I want to make, like, a little video of her, like, put it up somewhere, like, you're famous, you're on ESPN more times than me.
So when, you know, there's that lyric, like, you wasn't with me shooting in the gym.
She was.
It's not true. She was with you shooting in the gym, bro.
She's shooting
in the
gym.
Never say
that
to her.
And she's like, she's had it, like, rough too, because a few times last off season, my parents would go visit my sister. And so I'd want somebody to feed the machine in the cage. So I had her feed the machine, and I've hit some balls off the net that, like, have come really close to hitting her. So she keeps coming back. I don't know.
Is she offering any criticism or compliments? Is she critiquing in any way?
She's tough. She's tough. If I'm like, if I'm frustrated with something, I'm swinging, she'll be like, let's go get your head out of your ass. Come on. Like, what are you doing? She's tough.
She knows it's a mental thing.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. They call me King of the Segway. Can I segue right here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Always.
I don't know if anybody calls me that, but I'm going to do a great segue.
Sure.
So you got this video, and what you're doing is you're working on your receiving. And we've talked about this a little bit on the pod. Guys are doing things a lot differently these days, whether it be they want to increase their defensive statistics, their frame rate, whatever it is. I think this is a kind of like a trick the umpire thing. But it's the get really low, start with the glove down, and kind of work your way up drill. You see it all throughout baseball. Guys are getting on the one knee, putting the leg around, and that you've been working on. Can you kind of, like, talk to us why guys are doing that? And can you kind of like say how it's going? Because I'm very curious about this.
So the idea behind to kind of make the appearance of the ball being a strike when it's not. And the, I guess through trial and error, the process of doing that the most is working from the bottom up, because you know, the pitcher's throwing a ball downhill or a breaking ball is going down, and you want to work underneath the ball to make it go higher in the strike zone so that the borderline pitches make it look like they're in the middle of the strike zone. I think the one knee thing came about because guys might have a harder time getting a target lower or getting, you know, their mobility to get closer to the ground so that they can work up as opposed to starting up. And if your glove's like, say, in the middle of the strike zone, back up, it like gives the illusion that you're moving the ball. So you kind of want to like trick the umpire to seeing it's just one motion that you're going to catch the ball, but in reality, you're moving it back to in the middle of the plate. Everybody has their own style. Everybody has their own like little tricks of the trade to make it work. Some guys teach it with like your thumb always being down. Some guys teach it with your elbow being, you know, above the ball. So you kind of want to make it like your thumb is the highway. So like, if you think like this is always the north south of it, like you're going to catch the ball. So it's like going up and your thumb is always up and down. So that gives the appearance of like your glove is always on the same plane and is always in the middle of the zone. I don't mind the one knee. I know some people talk about one knee with men on base. I'm old school. Like I have way too much pride to let a ball get by me or let somebody steal because I'm on one knee. Like I have way too much pride to let that happen. So a few battles with some people about it. And some guys, if they can do it, great, you know, good for them. But somebody, you know, for me, the way I think of it is if, okay, it's the seventh inning, we're down, you know, one or two runs and there's a man on first base and a ball gets by me and the next guy gets a base hit, you know, that's a run. That's something that is going to, you know, put their team either ahead, tie, or even closer to beating us. And for me, I'd rather, you know, maybe take away a strike and throw a guy out or block a ball and not have that run scored on a base hit than let somebody, you know, have an easy, you know, easy run.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by all this stuff with the catching stuff. And we talked with Tanner, or I chatted with Tanner Swanson a little bit. He was a Twins catching coach, and he's a big advocate of the, you know, starting from the ground and going up. But when we talked with the Yankees catcher, backup catcher, Higashioka, and he was like, I'm not into that. I'm doing my own thing. So it's funny when these new philosophies come out, like you're been in the league a while and you have your stance. Do you search out new techniques or do you kind of like, oh shit, what's this about? Is it something that you're eager to learn about a new technique or is it just kind of weird?
Well, I think like, as my career has evolved, like I was never taught, you know, to move the pitch. I was taught to catch it with nice soft hands. And if I moved the ball, that was when I first came in the league, if I moved the ball, that was an indication the ball was not in the strike zone. So I was always taught to like have nice, soft, like quiet hands. And that way the umpire would have more, you know, opportunities to see the pitch where it was and to call strikes. And then as it's evolved to where, you know, now moving the ball is almost the norm. So at first I was kind of against it, but I was like, if I want to, you know, stay in the big leagues and have a longer career, I need to adjust and to learn this. So it's definitely something that I reach out to. Watch a lot of video, watch guys that have success with it. He was the one that advocated the thumb, like the highway type thing. And then for me, my numbers were always better with a man in scoring position. So like I try to like tinker my stance to where I felt like I was in a secondary stance with somebody on base, but felt comfortable enough to where I wouldn't like wear out my legs by the second inning.
When you say your numbers were better, what numbers are you looking at? Like, because defensive metrics are so all over and I don't even know which ones I like or dislike.
Especially catching metrics. Catching metrics to me are out. There's too many variables, and you can talk about it, Drew. I'm sorry. I feel very strongly about this.
No, I'm with you. I think it's a flawed stat, personally, like the whole pitch framing numbers, because there's three variables in it that we can't control. You have an umpire calling balls and strikes, throwing a ball, and you have a hitter trying to hit it. So there's three things that get in your way of, you know, it'd be one thing if it was just like, okay, we're firing a ball from a machine and, you know, it's going to be in the same exact spot almost every time. But if I'm catching a guy like, you know, Mark Burley or Greinke or Kershaw, who are throwing the ball exactly where they want it just about, you know, all the time, my numbers are going to be through the roof, whereas I might catch a young rookie who's throwing 98 miles an hour but has no idea where it's going. And then if I catch an umpire on a bad day, I might do everything correctly. You know, I caught the pitch the perfect way and I framed it, you know, perfectly. But, you know, whatever, he had a long flight the night before and he called it a ball. Like, that's, for me, that's negative numbers. So, I got off the topic a little bit. But my numbers, meaning like my pitch framing numbers, were better for when somebody was on second base or like on first base or third base than they were when nobody was on, because I have a different stance. Emulate my secondary stance with somebody on base to my like primary one with, you know, just kind of like a normal, comfortable, relaxed position.
How are pitchers responding to that? Because I know guys like to throw to everybody knows guys like to throw to certain catchers. There's just a feel that you can have with a pitcher. And I know from playing with you and talking to guys about you, that guys love to throw to you because you receive the ball so well. Maybe it's because you've always wanted to receive it soft like that, but you know, you've always had a good rapport with pitchers. Now with this starting to kind of be the norm, are pitchers kind of talking to you guys about it? Or is it like, hey, like just give me any strike that you can, do whatever you got to do to get me those strikes? It seems to me like that's a little strange to be looking at guys have their glove on the ground, but you know, maybe pitchers don't care about that.
Yeah, I think it's an individual basis. I think for me, I try to always have that conversation with them beforehand saying, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'll try to help you. If you don't like it, I'm fine with going to like, tell me what you want. And I've had some guys say, hey, you know, I don't want that glove movement. I need a solid target. Like give me, you know, a glove in this position, or I need your body in this position. And I'm okay with that. I'd rather have them tell me what they want and they can execute a pitch. Whereas they're like, if they don't tell me and they don't like something, if they're telling, if I'm doing something that they don't like, you know, that's just another thing that's in their mind to where they may rather. So there's guys that don't mind if they say, yeah, just, I don't care if you set up late, if you set up early, if you do jumping jacks while I'm throwing a pitch. But some guys like a nice, quiet, still target.
How's,
in this?
Go ahead, Jake.
We might be dancing around one of baseball's hot button issues, and I know clickbait Ploof loves that shit. Do you believe in, do you want to see that, or do you feel like it's part of change? Like, is Sal Butera going to come at my neck if I say we should have robo umps, or what's the deal?
Yes.
No, he'll send somebody else to do it. He won't come at you directly.
That's true.
There you go.
He'll get you in the barber shop.
Oh no!
I'm against robo umps. I am. I think it takes away from the purity of the game. I think that this has been going on for a long time. I think I even miss, like, I understand the instant replay gets the call right. I do, but what I miss the most is manager umpire arguments. Like, I miss the ejection. I miss the hype. I love throwing Lupinella, throwing hats, and kicking dirt. That's good entertainment. And I feel like some fans, like purists, love that. They love coming to the game, hoping somebody might get thrown out. Like when, you know, Trevor and I play for the Twins, I love seeing Gardy get thrown out. And honestly, sometimes it's just to rally the squad. Sometimes it's like he'll hit his bench coach, like, watch this, I'm going to get thrown out. And he'll go, it'll be nothing. It'll be like, you know, a guy was out by like 12 feet and he thought he was a close call. And he went out and argued him and got thrown out just to rally us. And I miss that.
Yeah, though he was, I mean, Gardy's kind of like the guy for that.
I think he led the league last year.
The latest guy. He's got a lot. We have a t-shirt. They put a t-shirt out 1 year. It was like his 1,000th career win, I think, or something like that. And it said like 1,000 something wins, and then put the number of ejections that he had. And it said, and counting. I'm going to have to bring that shirt on. But Gardy was, he loved the thrill of it too. Like, it wasn't just like the bench loved it. Like, he loved getting the crowd into it. He loved the pageantry of it. And I think you got to respect it.
Yeah, he got tossed a lot.
I respected it.
What's that?
Does one stick out for you guys? Like it? What's the Guardy one? If you guys are saying Guardy or Jeffrey?
There's so many.
I was saying there are many. They kind of all do run into each other. I feel like I could do like a impression because I've seen it so many times. You know, he was a big like grab the hat guy. You know, he would take his hat off, little small kicks of the dirt, kind of like head down. But then he wasn't afraid. And it's funny, if you watch some of his ejections, the umpires, like, they know it's coming. So, like, they're just like, all right, Guardy, like, I'll let you have your 2 or 3 minutes here. They kind of just sit back. They don't say shit. And then Guardy will kind of, I feel like, will give them, like, a heads up, like, okay, like, throw me out now. And, like, whether that's, like, he finally says a curse word or, like maybe gives him what it is, then you'd see him just toss him. And he had a lot of them planned. It was fun.
There is one in particular. They're playing, and they were he had better days, to put it that way. And he came out to the mound, and he's like, "I'm waiting until, you know, this guy comes out. He's gonna give him a piece of his mind." And I don't think Guardy was ready for what the umpire had to say, because Guardy started getting into him, laying into him. He's like, "Guardy, I just suck today. I got nothing. I'm sorry, I suck." And Guardy's, "Well, I came out here all this way to get thrown out, so you better throw my ass out."
That's awesome. Damn, that's awesome.
Great. Yeah, he's a good one, man.
Yeah.
Talking about Sal, you're a second generation MLB player. Your dad was a catcher. Was that like, did you ever fight that, or you're like, I'm following dad's footsteps, I'm being MLB catcher? Is that just from day one? The goal?
So, no, I fought the good fight of not becoming a catcher.
Okay.
I was a shortstop, like, you know, and I felt like I was really good. I had good hands, good arm, but I lacked range. I could not, as the highs, you know, went on, I could not get too many balls like T. Poof could. So I knew that after the strike was out. And then my dad never let me pitch, never wanted my arm to, for me to hurt my arm, because that was my best tool. And then just kind of like putting two and two together, like, okay, I have good feet, good arm, good hands. Shortstop and catcher are very similar in that aspect, that you need those tools to play. And it was one of the fact that I could move just a foot instead of 15 feet to catch a ball. So it was kind of an easy transition for me.
Yeah, you got a gun to it.
10 years in, I think you made the right choice.
I still think I could have been one hell of a pitcher.
Well, I mean, you have a pretty good sample out there. Yeah, here's a question.
Segway King, hit the stat, Jim. Hit the stat, baby.
What do Marcel Ozuna, Martin Prado, Marwin Gonzalez, and Carlos Gonzalez all have in common?
My book for strikeouts.
All have been struck out by Drew Bue. Dude, one of your pitching appearances, you threw a 74-mile-per-hour pitch, an 84-mile-per-hour pitch, and a 94-mile-per-hour pitch. And you got Vin Scully on the call. you flabbergasted Scully.
Yeah, I still have that video, because it was Vin Scully saying, like, when I was walking off the mound, I was like, wow, that was the brightest moment of today's game.
Or yeah.
However you sound.
Yeah.
And so I still have that video. I was like, wow, that's something I have to save, just to say, like, here's this – legend, Hall of Fame, extraordinaire. Like, if you think of like broadcasting, you think of Vin Scully. And so for him to say that about me, I was like, you know what? I have to get this on DVD. I have to save it.
Yeah. You had like five appearances. Were you like a quick hand up? Like, hey, if you're putting a position player and I want the mound?
No, I think, so my very first one, I was like, yeah, sure, I can pitch. You know, like, well, I'm not going to tell him no. So I actually warmed up in the tunnel. So it wasn't even in – I didn't get to throw in shoes. With the tunnel that leads you out of the stadium, because they don't have a batting cage for visiting teams. So I warmed up in the tunnel in my socks, then put my shoes on, ran right out. And after that, it was kind of like, if we ever got in a situation, they're like, hey, have you ever done it before? I was like, yeah. I was like, great, so you're in. I was like, oh, crap. And then I actually, my third appearance was with the Dodgers. And I had a 1-2-3 inning, and that's when I struck out Marcell Ozuna. And they're like, damn, he threw so well. I pitched 2 days later. So I was like, I told Donnie, I was like, I don't think we need to make this a habit. Like, I get that I had a 1-2-3 inning, but that's
your work, man. Yeah. I always, this is a topic that fascinates me because I'm hoping Ohtani knocks down doors and that we have this future generation of kind of two-way guys. And I think you're kind of speaking to it. Do you think if they let you kind of be a two-way player in the minor leagues, do you think that could be like, that would have been part of the Drew Butera story?
No, I would have got rocked.
Okay.
The only reason why I struck people out is because no one knew I could throw hard. And then I'd be up there for two hitters just laying it in at like 82, 83, maybe mixing a changeup. And then I would just let one eat at 94. If I got the two strikes on somebody, I would let one eat. And so that's the only reason why. If I were a legitimate pitcher, I honestly feel like my numbers would not be very good because my ball is so straight that it would get hit a long, long way.
I think
I'm going to say this. I don't think that's right. I think that if you worked as a pitcher and you worked out as a pitcher, I think 94 is like you're sitting nice. And like, yeah. 97, 98. And if you learn some finger pressures, I mean, I think you could do it. You got an absolute cannon, dude. And I mean, it's a clean throwing motion, so the ball's going to get on you. Have you done your spin rate? Do they do that for catchers?
Yeah. So actually, no, they don't do it for catchers. But they were setting it up in Atlanta last year, and I was just messing around while they were getting it loose, and I was waiting for somebody. I think it was Mike Sensatella or somebody to throw a bullpen. And so I had our bullpen catcher get down there. And I was like, I just want to see what my spin rate was. And I think with shin guards and turfs, it was like 2,300.
That's like was that like league average? Is that high?
I think it's like maybe just a tick above. I think like 21 or 2200 is like league average. Yeah.
Yeah. Like 28 is like an elite one.
Yeah.
I think you totally got it.
Yeah, man. Don't be humble on here, dude.
Drew has one of those balls. Throw a ball like Mauer was the same way. You have to catch a stolen base attempt or a pickoff. The ball looks like it's going to be down but stays up. So you really have to know these guys that have that spin because you have to prepare for that or else you're going to get hit right in the you know, the palm instead of the glove or the netting. So I believe in you. I believe in your arm, Drew.
See, this is why if you were to ever ask me who my top five teammates were, T-Pluve is automatically number one. It was like my personal hype.
No.
Pump it up, baby. Pumping that gas.
There you go.
No, to be honest with you, like I'm not like when it comes to like I'm modest, but like I know I have like really good arm strength. That's not like, but today like 97 is, you know, that's like, you know, a drop in the bucket. Like everybody's kind of true. Everybody's coming out of bullpen is throwing 97. So I'd have to come up with something really special.
So when there's a speedster on and you know he's trying to steal and you know a fastball's coming, is that like a big moment for you? Are you like, go motherfucker, let's do it? Like
100%. 100%. Yeah.
Love that.
Well, I can't, if I know, you know what? It's like, I don't want to throw out the guy that's like an average runner. I don't want to throw me out. I want to throw out, you know, the Dysons, the Ichiro, the guys like that steal tons of base, like Billy Hamilton. I want to throw them out. Cause at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, that's right. You ain't got nothing.
What do
Who's
you
your,
get?
Like list? Like who's your guys that you're like at the end of the day, you'll be like, yep, got him.
I think honestly, the only one I haven't gotten is Billy Hamilton.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. You thought
I don't know how many attempts he has with me or against me. But I know, I don't think I've thrown him out.
So
I know I threw out Ichiro, I threw out Dyson, pretty sure I threw out D Gordon.
Not a bad list.
Yeah.
What about when a catcher steals on you? Like I was going through it and you threw Russell Martin out at one point. Is there like, is that catcher on catcher crime? Are you like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Like honestly, especially if like they know that I can throw.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what are you thinking, man? And then honestly, if they get one on me, I mean, if I make a bad throw and they get a really good jump, I'm like fuming. Like I want to like I want to go back in the dugout and beat some shit up. Like,
do you want to? Do you want to grab a bag on him if you get the first thing? Because Posada used to do that, where if a catcher stole on him, Posada would then try to do like some weird delayed steal or a steal. Is that it? Is that part of you at all? Like, all right, I'm gonna steal on you now.
So okay, so even though I had two bags last year, I know my limitations.
Two
okay.
bags.
Humble brag.
It's not
humble
bad. Brag,
were yeah. they back end bags or were they like no. real bags?
No, they were real bags. Yeah, they were. One was a 2 count, and then the other one was a 1-0 count guy. Just I caught him sleeping.
Wow.
So you were the but guy. You, were know, the, you had him fuming.
Yeah, exactly. but I know, like, I know that I'm not a speed guy. Far from it.
We know that.
Yeah, so if I run and get thrown out, then it's like, dude, what the hell are you doing? Like, well, okay, he stole a bag on you. Why are you trying to steal a bag on him?
All right.
Have you ever picked off anybody prominent that may be a friend of the pod? I'm not really
well,
sure.
Well, I might segue this into a video for you guys, but I picked off a good friend Mike Moustakas.
And I'm pretty sure up there.
I'm pretty sure I had the best tag in the game at that time with T. Plouffe.
Right in the face, we saw it.
We talked about that. You know, we brought it up, and I got to be honest with you, I had forgotten about that. It was 2011, so quite some time ago. But Jim sent me the video, and I'm sure we'll have the editor chop it up here all the time. It was basically like a pick your pants. You'd send me the signal back, and then I would just vacate my position. Pray to God he didn't hit me a ground ball there. And I'd run to the second base and get your throw. We got Moose. I think it was the last game of the season. He was not like happy with it. You know, he was.
Well, you also smacked him right in the kisser. Pissed.
I did hit him in the face, but that's part of the game. Yeah. Sorry, Moose.
Well, it was a tied game, and he was the go-ahead run on second base. So how often did you call for that play, Drew? Like the sleeper make Plouffe run over?
Yeah, so when we were together, especially I think in 2009 in Rochester, I think we got like 8 or 9 guys. And I still call for like – I still use – well, I'll give away my secret. I still use the pants. And I'll have the shortstop
great signal.
Honestly, like I'm not just saying, like Trev was always in the game. Like he always wanted to pick. Like I literally have to yell at somebody once a game to like pay attention to me. Like that you're giving away free outs. Like you're giving away, you know, something that can help the team win. And like I never once had to like even tell Trev, you know, to pay attention, or he'd always be giving it to me. I'd have to be the one like, oh shit, here we go. It's on.
Yeah, it goes the other way too. Like you have to have a catcher that's willing to do it. Like guys that want to throw. Like you'll see. Like you'll know the guys that want to throw. Like right now, it's Maldonado. That guy wants to throw every time. Sal Perez wants to throw every time. Drew Butera wants to throw every time. You got to get the guys that are confident. And when you do that, man, it's fun. It's just another part of the game that you can catch guys sleeping all the time. Especially if a guy, you know, hits a double. He's feeling himself. He's giving the freaking daps back to the dugout, you know, whatever. Pitch, you just bang him. And you can get him off his pedestal real quick. You know, send him back to the dugout. He can go high five his boys in the dugout then.
I was going through your caught stealing list, seeing if you ever threw out the same guy twice in one game. As far as my research, you did it once. Is that a memory? Is that something that would stand out? Do you remember that at all? It's a pretty fast player.
I don't remember that, no.
It was us. Fold. The Rays.
Oh, Sam.
Oh, Sam Fold, yeah.
Tried to take second on you. You nabbed him. Then later in the game, he tried to take third on you. And you gunned him down to third.
That was when he was Tampa, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I do remember that, yeah. All right.
There you go.
I'm doing some research right now.
Let's switch it over to the bat. I was going through some big plays in your history when you're in the box. I think your biggest is well, I'll get to that. Your first home run is a pinch hit job in extra innings to give your team the lead. And I think you were early on in your career there. Do you remember that at all? Got to remember your first home run.
Yeah,
right?
We were in Philly. Yeah, it was, we were in Philly. It was the day before Father's Day, and it was actually, so It was a day game. I wasn't playing. I was in the bullpen, warming up pitchers and trying to stay ready, whatever. And actually, I have a more memorable moment than my home run, I think. This is back when Jim Thome was collecting his home run balls. You know, it was post 500, so he was collecting every single one that he hit. And I was sitting next to the bullpen catcher, Nate Dahman. I tapped him on the shoulder. I put my glove on. Now, if you know the bullpens in Philly, they're in center field and they're like stacked up on top of each other. And the visiting one is on the second floor of it. And I tapped him on the shoulder. I was like, "Hey, I'm gonna catch Tom's home run right here." And we were down at the time. I think a couple runs, and I think that home run either tied us or bomber. And he's like, "Yeah, right. You know, if he'd have to hit it out here, it's a big time bomb." And pitches later, he hit it, and I caught it. And they radioed into the security guy at the dugout and was like, "Hey, we need that ball." And I was like, "No chance. Like, I'm giving it to Jim. Like, you know, if Trev, like, Jim's like the best guy in the world, like greatest teammate. So I wanted to be able to give it to him and shake his hand and give him a hug and say congratulations." And they called down like an inning later. It's like, "Hey, you're going to pinch hit." So I had the ball and I gave it to him. I was like, "Hey, man, congrats, dude. This is freaking awesome." Like, I was so pumped. And then I pinched hit a home run. And the first guy to meet me on that steps was Jim Thome to give me a huge hug and say congrats. So I was like, "Damn, that's pretty badass."
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's awesome.
Now, when you caught his home run.
That's awesome.
When you caught his home run, was it right to you? Or were you like darting across the bullpen to make sure you caught it because you told the guy?
No, I took like, I don't know, maybe probably like 10 steps to cross the bullpen to catch it, but still, like, for me to like sit there, and I don't know how serious I was, but I was just like, "Hey, I'm gonna catch Tom's home run right here."
You knew it was coming.
Literally, like three pitches later, catch it. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, damn. And my first home run actually was the very first at bat my dad saw me playing the big leagues.
Bam!
Oh, wow, I didn't know.
And
that.
The day before Father's Day.
And the day before Father's Day, yeah. So he had flew in. He was scouting at the time. He flew in. He had Philly as one of his teams. And so when I made the team out of spring training, my mom and dad flew out to Anaheim where we opened the season, and we had a 4-game set. So I was like, "Okay, well, at least I'll play one of the games," thinking. And Maurer played all 4. So I was like, "Oh, damn, they don't get to see me play." And then it was like, I don't know, you know, a couple months later, day before Father's Day, he flew out to watch Philly, and that's when I hit the home run. And if you know my dad, like, he loves to be a part of everything. He loves to be in every – like conversation, he loves to be a part of like what's, he has huge like FOMO, and somehow he talked his way into our clubhouse after the game. And so I'm doing interviews and in walks my dad, and right in the middle of the interview comes and gives me a big hug. I'm like, how did you get in here? Like what, like who let you in?
Sal is so show. He can just walk in. Like, it's like, he just puts up the deuces. It's like, "I'm going through."
And that's exactly what he does. Like, he walks by somebody like, "Excuse me, sir, I need to see your ID." He's like, "No, it's okay. I'm supposed to be here." And just like keeps walking.
That's so sad. That's great, man.
The next biggest at bat I wanted to ask you about is also, it's not a pinch hit appearance, but it's your first at bat late in the game in the ALDS Game 4, the big comeback. You draw a 10 pitch walk. I just watched it again back today, but that was, I mean, it's a walk, but that is, you pass the baton to, I think, Gordon behind you. Is that a fond memory in your brain as well? Because I think even in the post game, everyone was saying that at bat by Drew set up the whole thing.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Oh, okay, sorry. I thought my headphones were. Yeah. So that to me was like probably my most memorable bat of my career so far, just because like the magnitude of the game. We were down, I think 3 or 4 runs going into the 8th inning, and we just had, I think we put like 5 or 6 hits in a row, and then Correa had the error off Morales. And so I came in as a substitution for Sal, and I did not want to be the guy to take us out of that kind of rally. And I think I went down 1-2 right away, and I was like, you know, I'm just going to do whatever I can to either. We had a guy on third base. I knew I could drive, and we were down 1 run. I knew I could put the ball in the play or, you know, get the ball in the air to get him in. And he kept throwing me slider after slider, and I fouled a bunch of them off, finally worked back to 3-2. And I knew with Gordon behind me, he wasn't going to, you know, throw me anything close to me. So I was like, just sit away. I think I fouled another, like, slider or fastball off. And then he threw me one way outside, and Gordo wound up, you know, rolling one over to second base for to get the winning or the tying run and score.
Yeah, go ahead, run. There was I just watched it. The 2-2 pitch was real close. I was like, oh, yeah,
it backed up, right? It backed up the slider.
Yeah. But it was
my
cool.
My heart stopped a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. And then later on that postseason, you get to catch the final out of the World Series, which was, that's a memory that I think not a lot of people ever get to have.
No, on a strikeout like that? That's incredible.
No. Yeah, that to me was one of the coolest. I wish that I would have planned out Wade and I's celebration a little better.
You guys both went for the jump.
Yeah, so that picture that was used forever, like for our World Series, like on the cover of like, you know, every magazine and every like Kansas City newspaper was like Wade and I's awkward jump, and like if you look at both of our faces, we're like, oh god, what am I supposed to do? And so, his wife actually calls it his O face. So that's even more awkward for me.
Oh, I'm going to have to Google search that just so I know what Wade Davis's O-face looks like.
Yeah.
Got to know.
But, yeah, I mean, that was, like, you know, the pinnacle for me. Like, you as a kid who, you know, dreamed of playing in the big leagues and dreamed of winning a World Series, that you know, every kid's like, oh, bottom of the ninth, 3-2 count, bases loaded, I'm going to walk off home run. And to be able to be a part of that celebration was really cool.
Did you keep that ball?
And then that –
I didn't know. Well, originally I did. We ran on the dog pile and two guys grabbed me and they're like, hey, we need that ball. I'm like, no chance in hell you're getting this ball. I'm keeping it for myself. And like, no, we just need to authenticate it. I was like, and I gave him a look like, no way. You're lying to me. Like, bullshit. Get out of here. And like, no, here's the authentication. Like, we need to authenticate. I was like, all right, cool. So they authenticated, gave me back. I went right back to the celebration. And through the off season, I was like, man, it's cool. Everybody come over. Like, here's the last out. You know, I'd show them, you know, it's a cool story. Cool like display piece or whatever. And then I got the thing and I was like, man, it wasn't just me who like, it'd be different if I was like, I won the Masters in golf or I won Wimbledon. Like, it wasn't just me. It was like, it was a team, it was an organization, it was a city that like collectively went through like 162 games plus the postseason, ups and downs. I was like, this doesn't belong strictly to me. So that offseason during our fan fest, I kind of planned it out. Like, had our GM come on, like, stage it a little bit, come on stage, and had the guy ask me a question about the World Series ball and what I did with it, and I pulled it out. I was like, and I kind of gave basically the same story I just gave you. I was like, it doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the city. So they put it in their, like, Royals Hall of Fame.
Nice.
It's awesome.
I would have kept it.
Yeah, I should have kept it.
I would have kept it. Are you kidding me? I'm going to go steal that thing. I'll give it back to you.
Thank you.
And did that next year, Drew, 2016, because, yeah, World Series is nice, but 2016, you low-key raked, dude. What were you just having the World Series glow on you, the World Series shine, or what was going on then?
No. So I hit with Victor Martinez in the offseason, and actually right before the final game of our regular season, Pedro Grifol, who – like, I credit a lot of my offensive success from that point on to him, because he kind of gave me a wake-up call. Like, for me, I knew hitting is tough, and I knew hitting once a week was even harder. So, like, I was always not, like, content with hitting 200, but, like, I knew that it was hard. And I wasn't, like, getting to week, but I'm hitting. Like, I was always defensive-minded. To play in the big leagues for a long time, or do you want to come into spring training every year and compete for a job? And I was like, what do you mean, what the hell? I'm like, I'm a freaking stud, like, are you kidding me? And he's like, and he kind of gave me a wake-up call. He's like, this is what you need to do, this is the approach you need to have. And we kind of worked on some things leading up to the postseason, and then in the offseason I hit with Victor Martinez, and he like just reiterated what Pedro told me, and like things that like you know, I had been working on the past, like, that didn't work consistently. I needed to make a change. So I just kind of changed my approach. Like, my swing was always good. Whenever I played for a consistent basis, I'd always hit. So it wasn't my swing. It was more of my mental approach and, like, how I went against, you know, my scouting reports for the pitcher. So and kind of also, too, not to, like, you know, get too high or too low. Like, there'd be times where I'd get into a slump and that would lead into, like, a 4, 5, or 6 game slump and said, like, hey, you know what? Oh, well, I went over. No big deal. You know, come back tomorrow and get a couple knocks. So there was it was a lot more of like a mental process for me to kind of have success that way as opposed to just going out there and just trying to bang a ball off the wall.
Great.
I think it's nice for all of our listeners to hear this. I feel like every single guy that we talk to, the guys that have played a long time, they all say the same thing. Like, I had to make adjustments. I'm willing to make adjustments. It wasn't always easy. I had to learn how to, you know, manage my failures. Like, that's just kind of like good life advice too. You know, I think baseball kind of does that with people. Like, you fail so much in baseball, especially as a hitter, it really teaches you, it humbles you, and it instills that, like, that necessity to figure it out and to change when needed. And like I said, it's just kind of been like a common theme from everyone that we've interviewed. You know, Kipnis, Dozier, everyone's had to make adjustments, and it's no different with my boy Drubiu. And now, like I said, I think you got 8 full 10 seasons, like, turned into a hell of a career, man.
Yeah, still going too. I'm not yeah. done yet. I still have a few.
I know spring training is just spring training, and it's small sample size, but I mean, you were swinging well this spring training. I think it was like 2 homers and 10 at-bats or something like that. Is there changes being made, or was it just kind of a hot start, or were you amped up about the results you were getting thus far this season?
Yeah, no, it was definitely some changes made. I made them towards the end of last year. You know, just small mechanical things from watching guys and from just trying, you know, trial and error, picking some things up that might, you know, have worked. And I kind of refined them during the off season, and I was pumped about the success. I was pumped that, you know, all my bats except for maybe one were quality. So I think I had, I think maybe like 15 or 16 at bats, you know, mixed in with a few walks, but, you know, I was pumped about, you know, each at bat was quality. And, you know, I was starting to drive the ball, even some of the outs that I made, you know, I squared up and, you know, I was pumped to continue that. Unfortunately, this whole virus thing happened, but hopefully we'll continue that into when spring training starts back up again and then into the season.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you a couple quick hitters, catching wise. Who's your favorite fastball you've caught?
Favorite fastball I caught? Wow. It's not really fastball because it's more of like a cutter, but Kenley Jensen.
Okay.
It's number one in his arsenal, so it's his fastball. But that thing is when he was in his prime, when I was with him in LA, that thing was you know, that was tough. It was electric. It jumped out of his hand, and I felt like it almost like rose a little bit. It just kind of took off.
And it never rise. Made you want to
people catch-
yeah, he's a former catcher. So
yeah, I was gonna say
you didn't start thinking like, oh shit, maybe I can do this too.
No, he had the body for pitching. He's what, like 6'5", like 250. He had the body for
yeah. Who
for
the pitcher. Fuck put him behind the dish? Seems like
torture. I don't know.
What about a breaking ball? You got like one that jumps out? Just a breaking ball. Okay.
I got two. Kershaw's curveball. Obviously, I think everybody knows that.
It's a pretty good pitch.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people know how good it is, but I don't think people understand how like quality of a pitch like he can execute it as like so he could like Greinke's slider so he like makes it into so many different shapes like he can make it like he'll dissect you as a hitter and be like okay I'm gonna throw you this type of slider and then you know like if I come up he's like and I kid you not this is exactly what he told me we were hitting in the cage and he's from Orlando so I caught him in his bullpen and he was watching me hit in the cage and my dad goes hey Zach how would you get Drew you know how would you get him out and he goes I'd probably throw him a slider right down the middle. I'm like, what? like, I'm not that bad of a hitter. My God, what the hell? But that's how he dissects people in so many different ways. Like he would throw Trev one slider. He'd throw me a different slider. He'd throw a left-hander a backup slider because he knew that like he'd roll it over. Like that to me, like how he executed that pitch made it elite.
So is there any communication about like, do you just call slider and then you catch whatever version of his slider he throws, or is there any communication further about like, hey, slower slider or back door or what kind's coming?
No, there's a bit of communication. Like in our scouting report, he'll talk about how he wants to make one a little bit harder or a little bit tighter. But I think he just knows himself, you know, how to make it work and shape as the game goes on. He might see an adjustment that the hitter makes during at bat, and he'll shape it a little differently to get you out. It's a difference to where that it would throw me off, but it's a huge difference to a hitter where it would mess up their timing.
That's cool. It's awesome.
I love it, man.
It's really cool.
We love having you on, Drew.
What, yeah, man. And anything, God, I mean, do you have, I don't know if we're supposed to talk. I was going to call it a lockout. We're not in a lockout, but, I mean, any thoughts on baseball coming back or anything? I know we don't want it to be like the focus of the episode, but it's also on every guy's mind. So I don't know, like Kipnis, we talked to him a couple weeks ago. He was still kind of bullish, but things have changed a little bit since then. I mean, are you hearing anything, or where's your head at?
I probably haven't heard anything more up to date than what you guys already know. I think, honestly, it really depends. And this is my opinion. I think it really depends on, you know, what the government does. I think that if they continue to have society in this kind of quarantine zones or, like, you know, state lockdowns, I don't think that we'll be able to start back up. I think once they kind of allow businesses to reopen and people to get back to their normal lives is when we'll really get things going. I don't think this is anything to mess around with. It sucks big time, man. I know, just, you know, speaking in general, like baseball, yeah, baseball players are going insane right now, but like people like in everyday life are going insane. Like, you know, teachers are out of work, restaurants are out of work. Like there's so many people that are being affected by this virus that it's kind of selfish to say like, oh, well, we're missing our baseball season when like real life things are happening that are much greater than baseball. So I hope that we, and I say we, like I have a part to do with it, but I hope somebody comes up with some type of vaccine or cure or something to get this thing going, because I know not only will it be good for morale for players, but I think also for the country too, to get sports back up. I think, you know, sports teams in general give a lot of people, you know, stuff to think about and, you know, things to do and get their mind away from life.
What's your viewing sport pleasure? Basketball guy, football, NASCAR?
I like going. Yeah, I like watching people turn left. No.
You probably NASCAR Twitter is going to be all.
Wow.
That's all right. I'm more of a Formula One when it comes to racing. So that's okay.
Oh, okay.
Although I do have a really good story about, and we could say this for another time or later, but I have a really good story. I got to drive a pace car for the Kansas City Speedway during a NASCAR event, and that scared the living shit out of me. So I have the utmost respect for NASCAR drivers, but
I got to throw it back because you just reminded me. So we talked about how Drew and I lived together, and we rented
the PT Cruiser,
right? So we were renting it, and there was like four of us. We don't get home until 11 o'clock usually. So we jam in the PT Cruiser. We go back, and we had like a quiet little street. And we had kind of like a bigger driveway, and Drew was our driver. Like Drew loves cars. So he decided one night, I don't even know how it got started, but we started just cruising down this road. And I said it was late night, so nobody was there, but he'd jam it and then boom, he'd hit the e-brake and he just like drift us, like Tokyo drift us. And we did it every single night. And like, that's so obnoxious. It's so fucking obnoxious. Finally, the neighbors came out and told us, like, hey, like, we got kids here. They're trying to sleep. Like, we can't have this fucking fast and furious moment every night. And so we stopped. We became really good friends with our neighbors. But the PT Cruiser, man.
Good time.
It handled.
PT Cruiser.
It handled.
It hugged the corners tight.
Oh, one more thing I wanted to ask before we go. You guys got me?
I got you.
Yeah.
All right.
I got you.
You got the nice flow, you know, one of the better hair in baseball, and then you dyed it pink for a really good reason.
Oh, yeah.
How'd you enjoy having the pink hair? Or can you tell us the reason if someone doesn't know the story?
Yeah. So in the 2016 season, the lady who actually cut my hair, her good friend's son was in the hospital, just got diagnosed with cancer. And she asked me to go visit him. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I brought some Royal stuff. I was with the Royals at the time. I brought some Royal stuff. And I was literally just going to go in there, say hi to him, you know, check in on him, give him some stuff, and then leave. And this guy was like He was 7, I think, at the time, or 8. It's amazing, like, dude you'll ever meet. He had just, he was like, finally, you know, had this positive attitude. So we hung out for like an hour and a half, and he had his hair dyed a few different colors, and I was talking about it. And at the time, like, my like kind of like thing when I got a base hit is like was a hair flip. And he's like, hey, can I dye your hair so that when you do a hair flip, it'll be, you know, cool. If you beat cancer, you could dye my hair whatever you want. And so fast forward to 2 years, it was like middle of the season. He comes running down the bullpen. I'm like, Dagan, what's up, dude? How's it going? And he's like, guess what? I'm like, what? Tell me, what do you got? He's like, I beat cancer. I'm cancer free. I'm like, one hand, I'm like overjoyed. And I was like, so happy for him. And the second hand, I'm like, crap, now I'm going to have pink or blue or purple hair. I was like, I don't know. But it was, dude, honestly, it was a great like moment for both of us. Like, one, he beat cancer. Two, is like, we got to do something a lot of fun in a salon. We both dyed our hair pink, and it got some pretty good, I guess, publicity for him. So he was pumped about that.
Yeah, I remember.
And I was like, pumped for him.
You debuted it against the Yankees, so I remember it because the Yes Network did a whole feature on it as well. So it was all over.
Yeah.
How long did you let it ride?
So just that series. I told him I was just going to dye it for one series. So I let it ride for that series, and then I think we went to Texas right after that, and I dyed it back. But I remember taking BP, and it was after the first day. You know, home team hits first, and so I was in the last group. And I remember, I don't know, at least 15 guys going, hey, dude, what the hell are you doing with your hair? What's going on? Why is it pink? And so I'd have to retell that story every single time.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I've got one final last question, maybe, unless we just keep rolling, because I think everyone likes doing this more than quarantine.
Yeah.
But can you hype up the Rocks a little bit? Because we I've lived in Denver the past 3 years. That right field bar, every fan player needs to get up there at some point, because you're overlooking the mountains, you overlook the field. It's baseball heaven. But those Rockies have a lot of talent, man. And I was chirping in Jim's ears a lot, and he had to like level me out, because I might have been coming in too hot. But I mean, that team last year, midway through the season, was in the wild card position. The wheels kind of fell off a little bit, but there's still a young core that's really good. So give me like the Rockies hype train right now.
Yeah, you're not coming in hot at all. I think you're coming right on par. You know,
yes,
we have, our lineup is a joke. I mean, I would put it up against any other lineup, honestly. Like, you think about it, you got to go through Charlie, Story, Nolan, you know, Desmond, Murphy. You know, we got a sleeper.
Dahl, McMahon.
Yeah, Dahl, McMahon.
You guys go deep.
Yeah, McMahon's got the most juice I've seen, you know, in a long time. It's just natural, easy juice. And, like, we put together good at-bats. We battle. You know, our arms are no joke. I think, you know, last year some guys just kind of got a bad rap because they were battling through injuries. You know, a lot of sometimes things don't come out in the media what, you know, is truly going on. And guys were pitching through some stuff, and, you know, they want to be on the mound because they know that, you know, how good they are. So I think, you know, you're going to see a lot of bounce back years for a lot of our pitchers because of they're healthy. They had, you know, a good offseason, you know, good. They came back in strong. And I think we, as a team, we have a core kind of belief in, you know, what we want to do and what we would accomplish. So I think you're going to look at a really, really good team this year and watch for a lot of bounce back arms.
I love it. And that's, I think Marquez is one of the pitchers that more people need to know about in baseball. Freeland just had a tough break baseball year last year. And there's a lot of other guys that, I mean, and it's the story of the Rockies. I mean, if those pitchers get some outs.
They will. I know, like I was telling last year, it was just one of those things where, you know, whether it was bad luck or, and I know a lot of people say, oh, it's bad luck, but bad luck does happen. Sometimes you just have years where like you can't get people out, or you don't get hits, or you don't hit homers. Like, those things happen, and it's no fault of your own. Like, you're working your ass off. It's just these things happen. So Freeland looks amazing, man. Like, his mechanics are so smooth, and he cleaned up a lot of things that he's repeating a lot of things really well. You know, Sensatella is coming back throwing hard. Like, his ball is really, really heavy. You know, Marquez is Marquez. He's going to punch out 200 guys a year. He's got stupid good stuff. John Gray is he might be one of the strongest guys. He might not look it. He might be one of the strongest guys in all of baseball. That guy is a horse. And then we have a lot of guys fighting for that fifth spot.
Good stuff.
My rocks, baby.
You got your rocks content in. My goodness. Yeah, I knew you got it and stuff.
Wow. Cool. But Trev, you know that.
I'm all about it. I'm a big fan of the Rockies. I think someone needs to step up and challenge the Dodgers in the West. And really, if you're going through their pitching staff right there, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Tough and you park. Got the bangers. You got the bangers in that park, and you got defense. I mean, you got Drew Bue.
Let's go. Drew
Bue, baby.
I think I might do a little sprinkle on the Rocks this year for the NL West. Shortened
now
season. Rocks come out hot. I just go like this. Just a little sprinkle on the rocks, cool. And maybe I make a little cash, you know?
Yeah.
I'm out of the game now. I gotta do something.
It's a smart play.
Love it.
Let's go. Cool. I like it.
All right, man. Hey, we appreciate you sitting down with us. I don't know if Trev's got anything at the end, but that was awesome.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
I want to plug one thing and follow Drew on IG. It's Drew Butera, right?
Yeah, it's
Drew Butera. And Sundays.
Oh,
what
let's
are Sundays,
go.
Drew? We got to plug that because it's a big thing. I think Drew's going to turn it into a brand one day. But what do you got on Sundays, Drew?
We got Cinnamon Roll Sundays.
Cinnamon Roll Sundays, baby.
Yeah.
I think Jimmy really would like that. Maybe yeah. This Sunday, Jim, you take it with Drew and you do a Cinnamon Roll Sunday video, you making some cinnamon rolls.
Boom.
I don't eat stuff like that because I'm a machine, but you guys. Yeah,
your body's a temple.
No, it's so Trev can drink beer. That's the only reason.
That's true. That's true. All right. Blame him for the tie.
Awesome. Thank you, man. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.